Radio.
Hello and welcome to CryptoCurrent, the only podcast to bring you beginner and advanced knowledge of cryptocurrency and blockchain, analyses of cryptocurrency markets, and discussions on growing a business within the crypto space. Stay tuned and stay CryptoCurrent.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of CryptoCurrent. Your host here, Richard Carthon, and I have an incredible guest with me today that I met through a plethora of other people through trying to get different speakers for the upcoming conference we have coming up. And I was able to link up with this pretty unique and incredible person, Navroop, and her story is massively impressive, and she is working on a ton of awesome things. But before we get into all of that, Navroop, thank you for joining us today.
Richard, thank you for having me.
Of course. If you don't mind, can you tell our listeners a little bit about yourself and a little bit of background?
For sure. So I'm an economist by training. I'm a research fellow at MIT Media Lab with the Connection Science Research Group. Have been in the blockchain space since around 3 years now. And wear a variety of hats, both from an academic perspective, but also as an entrepreneur. I work as the head of economic strategy and my current startup, which is still in stealth mode. And it's been really interesting, I would say, so far, given coming from an econ background and seeing just the sheer amount of interest in the space. You know, when I started out 3 years ago, it was basically computer scientists and finance folks
right.
You would meet at conferences. So it's really gratifying to see that there's interest from all kinds of backgrounds and people from all walks of life. So yeah,
no doubt.
Exciting times.
No doubt. And extremely interesting with how you said people with different backgrounds getting into the space, especially with you know, you having your particular background. How did you get into cryptocurrency and blockchain? What was your initial injection into the space?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think if you think about this, and if you look at blockchain, decentralized computing and distributed computing is not new, right? Which is one of the core tenets. 10, 15 years ago, me and my brother used to torrent stuff, upload and download. And the funny story that my parents couldn't understand why the computer was on all night when we were sleeping. We were, quote-unquote, contributing to the community.
Right.
So I think it's kind of interesting in a sense how different experiences in your life converge. I ended up at Harvard for my thesis writing at the Kennedy School of Government, and a lot of the work that I did from a master's thesis was on network science. I studied complexity science in Italy during my time as a master's student. So all of these things sort of converged to really understanding networks, doing the mathematics of it, distributed computing, and I was hands-on involved in that. Over the years into something that felt like an obvious fit. And I realized that the economics of decentralized and distributed technology would actually be different from what we have as the main or core economic theories right now. So I got really interested in it last 2 years in particular. Building a trading platform for crowdfunded equity in my previous startup company, and just been getting deeper and deeper in the space, you know, and now have the opportunity to look across industries. So it's really exciting.
Wow. So definitely a unique way into getting into the space, and especially with your background and with doing torrents and everything and the decentralized part of it. It's very interesting that you bring up that side of decentralization. People, of course, it's a buzzword right now, and people think that as we look into decentralization, it's a new thing that people are diving deeper into, where it's truly has been around for a while. It's just been called different things. It's been focused.
Absolutely. Half a century at least.
Right. And now as we, you know, are looking deeper into like blockchain and crypto, now it's, you know, kind of being romanticized as this, you know, new thing that's coming out where it truly has been around for a while. And I guess with your background, you're able to like use that with how you've been able to build some of these new platforms that you've been working on.
Definitely. And I think there is a new component to that, and that is around trust. We wrote a Forbes article on how, if redemption from central control is what we're talking about, and the fact that there is a trust gap with corporations becoming too powerful, we see this new and newly packaged emergent interest in blockchain. And you're absolutely right. You know, the computing aspect, the technology itself and the various components is not new, but there is a push, right? So
right.
if you look at out in the world, there is a demand side of things and there's a supply side of things, right? It's very typical
right.
to say that as an economist, but the supply of the technology was there, at least the preliminary or the building blocks of it. But I think there's now this keen demand to have systems that we can trust. This has to do with the lot of scandals that you see, you know, things around Facebook and privacy-related regulations, people getting more and more careful and I would say careful and at the same time wanting to protect their data.
Right.
Which is, again, a new phenomenon. This wasn't the case, right? And all that we can do with that data and how we can leverage that with computing systems, with AI and machine learning. So I can predict what you're going to get for breakfast tomorrow better than you can. So, you know,
right.
it's pretty damn powerful.
Yeah. And to that effect, like just how technology is evolving and getting to that point of, just like you said, you can predict better what I'm going to eat tomorrow. Like that in itself is like a scary thought. But going to the trust side of it with all of this newfound use cases for the technology that's being built, or how do we build these things in a way that we know is not going to either take advantage of us or come back to be harmful mm-hmm. in the long run?
That's a great question. I think there are a few factors here. First of all, more and more people from different backgrounds need to be interested in this. So they vouch to become stakeholders in it, right? There would always be forces that are trying to monetize and take advantage and sway the system towards what benefits them. And that's not different for any technology or any new regulation or you know, any kind of economic growth opportunity. So keeping that in mind, it's funny because I think about the dynamics of power. I used to... I had a minor in political science, and so humans are political beings, right? And power is never given, it's taken.
Right.
So I think the important thing is to go out and be engaged. If you want to have a say in the development of really anything, be it technology, the economy, or the community, so on and so forth. So it has to come from the people demanding that they need to be engaged.
Right. And that engagement in getting all these different people across the board to get more involved is, you know, the first step and educating
yes.
these people and educating others into wanting to, you know, spark their curiosity into wanting to either learn more or get involved in this space. And earlier, I want to kind of backtrack a little bit. Earlier, you said that you made an article that was featured in Forbes. Now, you know, for people that have tried to do that, you know, it's a very challenging thing to be a part of. And the fact that, you know, they were able to take your content to be able to provide this to people to spark curiosity is extremely powerful. So, like, how were you able to go about and get that done?
Oh, that's interesting. You know, I think there is a degree of prestige that's sort of associated with Forbes. But over the years, I actually met the CEO of Forbes, Michael Dalos, at a private dinner they hosted last month. And we were going around the table talking about our resolutions for 2019. And I thought it was beautiful what he said, that so many people see Forbes as an agent of change, right? And he said he hadn't realized it. Now that so many people walked up to him and said that, oh, this is great, and some of the articles and their coverage changed their lives in many ways, particularly the Forbes 30 and the 30 list really is a career upgrade for many people.
Right.
And his commitment was to use Forbes' power and its brand name to affect positive change in the world. And my engagement with Forbes came through Lars Wintermeyer. He's a great guy, running from a finance background, is a Forbes contributor, and he connected at the SDG, Sustainable Development Goals Summit, at the United Nations headquarters, where we were both speaking last year. And, that is the power of innovation, right? That's the power of interaction. When you meet people from a different background, and there are these partnership opportunities, which I think the blockchain space is really open and ripe for. We decided to go to a continuous series of articles clarifying some of the what really is the separating the wheat from the chaff sort of thing in the crypto space and where it boils down to. And I think you mentioned previously that it sort of comes down to adoption, right? We can have all MVPs that can be there, but really what it would take for this to be the infrastructure technology in the future is mass adoption.
Absolutely, and that's what we're working towards. And I'm glad you're able to, pick the brain of the CEO of Forbes and to be able to be in an intimate setting and be able to advocate towards doing just that, going towards mass adoption and building products and things that are not only increasing the livelihood of others, but are introducing people to the future that I think is going to involve both blockchain and cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
So I know earlier you were talking on your economic background and everything that you're doing at that. So can you give us a little bit more insight on some of the economics of the emerging market that is cryptocurrency?
Sure, that's an excellent question. So fundamentally, if you look at current economic science or sciences, there is an underlying assumption, which is, first of all, economic beings are rational, which in many cases humans are not. And second of all, is that there is a central authority or a central decision maker, right? Or the invisible hand, which is not the same thing, but it's assumed that order emerges and markets clear themselves through the forces of demand and supply. And I really see the world from a network science perspective, right? So if I have to send you an email, just as an example, and we're both using Google, then what's really happening is that I push that email to Gmail, right? And that Gmail sent that email to you. We're not connected on a peer-to-peer basis. So the only party that's appropriating value from this network, the central hub in the network, is Gmail. Same is the case with Facebook. Or really any other big company that you see out in the world, the top five publicly traded companies are all internet companies in the United States at the moment with the highest market caps. So this is what we have as the platform economics. You provide a platform, everyone has to plug in through that platform in order to access that service. But the issue with that is it's a centralized network. There is one node in the network that everyone has to connect through in order to connect with any other person in the network. So that gives us a single party that is appropriating all the value that's created, by the way, by other people in the network, right?
Right.
So, for example, for Facebook, all the data that Facebook has is created by the users, but who is able to monetize it? Well, only Facebook. So I think if you build even as a model, you know, like an economic model, it's a fundamentally different network structure that underlines blockchain or peer-to-peer networks, where I think we need to redo what and how value is created and distributed within this network when there is no central node or there are no hubs in the network. And so I think that's really like my call to action for economists, that there is so much that economists have to contribute in thinking through and building these systems, that we need to continue pushing the needle, not just from a theoretical, but even more so from an applied perspective. And I think that understanding is there, or it's emerging now. After all, we have new fields like crypto economics or tokenomics,
right,
which will continue to evolve unofficially right now. But if enough number of people start using it and start working on it, they would be official very quickly. And I think that's really the power of innovation, of, again, a peer-to-peer community and the new economics of decentralized technologies. Yeah.
Right. And honestly, like with everything you just said, that actually kind of tees up my next question and my next thought of like, well, what are some things that you are excited about on the horizon for either 2019 or in the coming years, in the next, you know, 2 to 3 years in the cryptocurrency and blockchain space, within these, the economic side and within, you know, tokenization and everything else that you mm-hmm. have going on?
Yeah, I think for 2019, adoption is definitely on the horizon. Now, there is a very interesting thing a colleague of mine said. He said there is focus on user adoption, but it is not really usability, right? So,
right.
For example, you can have your wallets integrated into your browser. There are a bunch of solutions that do that. However, how do you get your tokens into their wallet in the first place? You still have to go to an exchange and register it through KYC. So I think there is a whole suite of services. All of these things need to work together. And
right.
the companies, the entities, the startups, or the corporates who do solve this, the entirety of the problem, is going to be the one who will be leaders in the space. And it may not come from a single party, but
right.
That is really what it needs to do in order for us to see adoption and mass scale. I am really excited about the technology itself, blockchain, and the fact that we can have more secure systems through
right.
cryptography. And, you know, billions of dollars are lost in the world economy every year because of data breaches and identity thefts and what have you. And so much so that it doesn't even make it to the news anymore, right? Because it happens every day.
Right.
And as such, I mean, as far as the cryptocurrency use case is concerned, I think stable coins are the biggest growing segment of the crypto space.
Definitely.
Something I'm looking at the moment as well, because after all, volatility is an issue, and it couldn't be more timely after the cryptocurrency crash. So
18,
those are the big ones, definitely. Those are the big ones. And I know the security coin offerings are also up and coming, although I didn't see them emerging as fast as the ICO, quote-unquote, bubble did last year.
Right.
So that remains to be seen. I think the regulations are obviously more and more clear, and at the same time, people are more and more mindful of it after the SEC's calls. So we'll see where that goes.
Right. Yeah, regulation is going to be huge, however they decide to go one way or another. And I think that's what's stopping a ton of bigger entities into diving into the space, especially on the corporate side. I know, of course, you know, you had your first bank recently come up that has, you know, tokenized.
Yeah, JP Morgan.
JP Morgan that's come mm-hmm. in and dove into, you know, cryptocurrency, which, you know, I believe, you know, theirs was also a stable coin, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes, it's basically a virtual representation of dollar. That's my understanding. And sure, they're deploying cryptography as a way to have a secure system, right?
Right.
But it's just, yeah, this is a payment solution to ensure speedy transactions.
Exactly. And this is going back into the, you know, the widespread adoption part of it is as you start to get more corporate entities in the space and get more involvement, you know, that is going to get more people's ears perked up and seeing like, oh, okay, maybe I should look into this. But then going back to your very first statement of how do all of these companies or people that are working in the space make it so easy to use that it's so simple that anyone can pick it up and use it. That is the biggest complaint that I hear from people that are in the space of like mm-hmm. just trying to figure it out. Like just not like conceptually, of course, trying to figure out cryptocurrency and blockchain is one thing. And that's usually the first barrier. But then second, like once they're actually involved and they understand it, like using it, you basically have to hold their hand through the initial process just so they make sure they're not messing up from the security standpoint, everything that comes with that. Like it is not easy to use, but it will get there, but you have to really want to learn how to use it at its current state.
I agree. So there are basically two sides of it. There's the more peer-to-peer, the crypto nerds side of the community. But if you see adoption that is driven by corporates, which I do think would be the case because, you know, JP Morgan clears trillions of dollars of transactions every day,
right.
Then people may not even know that it's on blockchain or it is crypto. And because you make it so easy, you abstract away so many layers of the technology, which currently are not abstract, people would be using it without realizing that they even are at the first place. So,
right. Well, definitely. So, two more questions for you. My first is, you know, what is a project that you are like that has your attention or that you're working on that that you can speak on that like you are really, really excited about that's going to be coming out hopefully in the next year or two?
Yeah. So I'm, like I said, affiliated with MIT and we are really big in the identity play on blockchain. The director of the research lab, Alex Pentland, has been involved with the World Economic Forum and have been through the passing of GDPR over the years. And I think identity is one thing that absolutely needs to be solved before we can talk about any kind of use case on blockchain, right?
Right.
So that, in my view, is the biggest play that's out there. Now, of course, a bunch of parties are trying to do it more from, you know, a non-governmental point of view, a foundational approach to it, or I should say through a foundation, or it can be something like a startup company that can be a vendor to other blockchain solutions. But I think really where it's going to come from is multi-stakeholder engagement, something like what MIT is hosting, bringing together stakeholders from government, from NGOs, from think tanks, from academia, and industry partners, and bringing them together in one platform or at one platform and figure out what are the key features of the system that we want to build that ensures everyone has a digital identity. Because if you have a digital identity, you can also have a digital wallet, right? And
right.
That doesn't happen before that. And at the same time, it is compliant with the rules and regulations and actually benefits the person whose identity it is. So you own your own identity and not the company. Of course, there can be other business models that can be built on top where you can receive micropayments for sharing data and so on and so forth. So there are some really hard problems that need to be solved. What happens if this person is in Europe and the company has to be GDPR compliant, right?
Right.
So there can be a trace that is left on blockchain that this data existed, but the data itself does not exist. So I think there's a bunch of challenging questions for cryptographers, for economists, for political scientists, and I think all of them need to come together in order to solve this. So this, yeah, that's, I think, the most exciting project that I know of.
That's awesome. And I'm looking forward to learning a little bit about that more myself. So I'll definitely keep that on my horizon. Awesome, this has been a really awesome interview, and you dropped a lot of great insight and thought-provoking things to us. But what is one final thought you want to leave to all of the listeners today?
So I would say something that I always say, that we need more diversity in women in the space.
Yes.
It's a little cliche to say, but I think if we really are building the infrastructure for the future, it is absolutely essential that we have all stakeholders and not just some tech dudes trying to figure out how we're going to do this, right? So I would encourage people, regardless of your background, to take interest in technology, emerging tech, because this is going to be the future. So no matter which field you are from, it's not about becoming a coder. It's about having an opinion, making sure technology caters to humans and not the other way around. My collaborator, Lauren from Forbes, wrote a brilliant article I had a chance to contribute to, which said the next big tech trend is humanity. So I would encourage people to read that and take it from there.
Definitely. We'll have to go check that out. And thank you for dropping that on us. I agree that it has to keep, diversity has to keep being more involved in getting more people from different backgrounds in it, and pushing this conversation forward. And I first want to thank you for continuing to, one, be in the space and pushing this conversation forward, and wanting to be an advocate of getting more and more people of diverse backgrounds involved. So kudos to you.
Thank you, Richard. Thanks for having me. This was wonderful.
Of course. Well, is there any way that our listeners can keep up with you, or is there any like social media handles or anything that you where people want to contact you? What's a good way they can do that?
LinkedIn is a great way to stay in touch and be in touch and be in the network. But if you have a very specific, strategic way to engage, and you have an idea or something you want to talk about from a research perspective, I would say email is the best. And the email is on LinkedIn. So
perfect.
You can find it.
Definitely. Well, I'll make sure that I have your link to your LinkedIn in the notes. But again, Narup, thank you for your time. And this has been awesome. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Richard. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for listening to another episode of CryptoCurrent. For more information on this episode and all of our episodes, please visit us at www.crypto-current.co. Stay up to date with the latest news in cryptocurrency by signing up for our newsletter. You will receive a daily email Monday through Sunday that is personalized and curated content specific to you and your interest, powered by artificial intelligence. Get your tickets today. We are throwing the first cryptocurrency and blockchain conference in New Orleans in March 2019. You can get your tickets today at www.crypto-currentconf.co.
This has been another episode of Crypto Current, bringing you one step closer to becoming a crypto and blockchain aficionado. We look forward to giving you the latest in crypto news and analyses next week. Stay Crypto Current.
Please use available exits now.